Good afternoon, ladies. We are studying Parashat Vayishlach, where we read about the great confrontation between Yaakov Avinu and his brother Esav, as well as the confrontation between Yaakov Avinu and the Malach of Esav. And miraculously, he escapes both confrontations without harm. As the Pasuk writes that he recovered from both those situations, Shalem, he was complete, without any blemish. Our parasha begins that Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Nefanav El Esav Achiv Arsa Se'ir Sede Edom. So it says that Yaakov Abinu sends Malachim, he sends angels. Some say it's angels, some say it's messengers, however you want to learn it. He sent messengers to Esav, and he sent him a gift, and he tried to bribe him a little, and he tried to tell him that he has no hard feelings against them, and that he wants to make peace. They came back, the messengers, Vayeshuvu ha-malachim el Yaakov lemor, Banu el achicha el Esav. We went, we told him everything, we gave him the gift. Ve'gam olech lekratecha ve'arba me'ot ish emo. So it says there's 400 generals, not regular soldiers, generals. Each one was a strong warrior that Esav is sending towards Yaakov. So it seems whatever he told him did not appease him. Which, why didn't it work? The Malachim said, Yaakov has nothing against you, everything will be okay, everything is fine. And now all of a sudden Esav is still upset. So I saw from one of the rabbis, he brings down a very, very important point. He says in order to make peace with someone, peace requires personal contact. It's very difficult to make peace through a messenger, through a go-between. Maybe in the beginning it's possible, but to make the true peace, one must reconcile it face to face. And therefore, Esav wasn't pacified with gifts and with good words through an agent. He needed to actually see Yaakov face to face. There's a story told of two Hasidic rabbis. One rabbi was called Rav Zalman. The other rabbi was called Rav Baruch Mezhbosh. That was the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. And these two rabbis got into a little quarrel. And there was nothing they could do to make peace between them. And the students were going back and forth trying to make the peace. And Rav Baruch, the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, said, I have an explanation. We see from this parasha that Yaakov could not make peace with Esav until he met him. As long as they were going with messengers, it didn't work. And sure enough, they ended up meeting each other and they ended up making the peace. The reason probably why this is because until we see the person face to face, we have ideas about him. We have emotions about him. We think the person is this and we think the person is that. And nobody can change that until you see the person himself and you see they're not as bad as we think they are. A lot of it is an illusion in the mind where we exaggerate it because we take it personal. And a lot of things we hear from people that are not accurate. And then many times we have a certain preconception of a person. Then we meet him and we sit with him. And we see really he's a nice guy. Or really she's a nice lady. It's not as bad as it was. But until that meeting takes place, the Yetzer Hara exaggerates it and makes things bigger than they are. It's not, maybe we're not supposed to quote former presidents, but Abraham Lincoln once said that, I don't like this man very much. I should start to get to know him better. Which makes a lot of sense. He says, I don't like him. I don't like him very much. He says, much because I don't know him. So I better get to know him, then I'll probably like him. And that's the same thing over here with Yaakov and Esav. Once Yaakov meets Esav, then already all the preconceptions and all the ideas, they go away. Dramatic changes in feelings occur when there is direct relationship. A very important lesson. One of the things he sent to Esav is, Im Lavan garti vayehar ad atta. He tells him that I lived with Lavan. You know the famous Rashi. Im Lavan garti v'tariag mitzvot shamarti. Ve'lo lamati m'ma'asav ara'im. The word garti means lived. I lived with Laban for 20 years. But garti is also the same letters as the word taryag. Taryag is 613. It refers to the mitzvot. So he was hinting to his brother, don't think I'm not religious. Don't think you're going to be able to beat me because I'm neglectful in keeping the mitzvot. Im Laban garti, v'taryag mitzvot shamarti. Not only did I live there, garti, but I also fulfilled the taryag. I also fulfilled all the mitzvot. And then he says, "Velo lamati mimaasav ra'im," and I did not learn from Lavan's bad ways. I once heard a question: what does he repeat himself by saying, "I kept the taryag mitzvot, and I did not learn from his bad ways, from Lavan's bad ways"? That's obvious. If you keep the taryag mitzvot, then you're not learning from Lavan's bad ways. He should have said, "Im Lavan garti v'taryag mitzvot shamarti." What does it mean, "Velo lamati mimaasav ra'im"? Isn't that obvious? If you have a person that's very, very precise in his observance, he keeps taryag mitzvot to the letter of the law, it's clear that he doesn't learn from the bad ways of his surroundings. So I saw one of the Baalei Musar say that it's possible to keep the taryag mitzvot, but still have tracings and influence from the environment. It's possible to keep the 613 mitzvot, but still have trimmings of the culture that we're living in. What do I mean? I'll give you an example. There was a big controversy many years ago in the kashrut world. There was a boat that they called Glat Yat. What did they do on this boat? They served glat kosher meat, and they also had after dinner, if you wanted dancing, and maybe they had a little entertainment. So there was a whole question, can you give kashrut to such a situation? So some argued, the food is kosher. We're giving kashrut on the food. Meaning the food that's being served to you is glatt kosher. All the other things that go around it, so we're not discussing that. We're providing a glatt kosher dinner. Now, who are these people that want to go on this boat? Obviously, people that are kasher. If a person doesn't want to eat kasher, he can go to a restaurant. He doesn't have to go in the middle of the ocean. He can go to a restaurant on land. Person only that has a devotion to the taryag mitzvot will go to such a place. Taryag mitzvot shamarti. But what? This is taryag mitzvot, but learning from the ways of the goyim. Learning from the ways of goyim, sitting, watching entertainment that's not in the spirit of Torah. Or being involved in a situation that might be not as modest as the Torah requires. So that's what happens many times. We're very careful in the taryag mitzvot, in the kashrut. For example, many people are careful when they travel for vacation on the kashrut. And that's something to be proud of. People boast how they bring their foods to vacation, and they bring their pots, and they bring their warmers, and all these different meats, etc., and they make sure to only go to a kosher place, and they're careful, and they don't eat out. Taryag mitzvot, it's a tremendous level of adherence. But it's taryag mitzvot where? It's taryag mitzvot, but learning from the ways of Esav. It has the trimmings of Esav. Where's taryag mitzvot? In a place that's not as modest as it's supposed to be, in a place that's not befitting, in a place that's not becoming, with all the other trimmings. So Yaakov is telling Lavan, it's not enough to keep the taryag mitzvot. It has to be taryag mitzvot as a Jew, not taryag mitzvot with lamati mimaasav ra'im, with the influence of Lavan. There's so many different things that we can analyze. Our behavior as religious Jews, it still has the feeling of Esav. You know, a fellow might say on a day like today, which is a day off, so a day off, according to Jewish law, means you spend it in the Beit Midrash, you spend it in the Yeshiva, you spend it in the Kollel, you have time, extra time to study. You wake up in the morning, you pray, you sit 3, 4, 5, 6 hours. But what happens? Our men are Sadiqim, they come to Knesset in the morning, they come and sit and learn. And then what? And then Lamati b'masav ra'im. Now we have to watch a football game, we have to involve ourselves in all the other culture. So this is... Now, does it say anywhere in the Torah that you cannot watch a football game? Does it say anywhere that you're not allowed? Of course not. But what? It's taryag mitzvot, it's strict observance, but it has a flavor of the culture that we're living in. It's not pure pure Torah lifestyle. And that's what Yaakov Avinu is saying. Don't think I'm keeping Tariyat Mitzvot like a modern guy that's still, after dinner, after Glad Kosher dinner, I'm going to watch some type of entertainment, or I'm eating kasher on a place where I shouldn't be, maybe, or, maybe it's, I learned in the morning, then I go, I sit in the theaters. It's not that type of Tariyat Mitzvot. It's Tariyat Mitzvot like it's supposed to be, with the atmosphere of a Jew. That's one explanation. But I heard another explanation from a rabbi, Rav Meir Shapiro from Lublin. Rav Meir Shapiro from Lublin learned this line a little differently. And he said like this, just like a businessman always has to innovate his business and try to find new ideas how to make money and how to be more aggressive than he was the year before in order to make a sale, religion, it's the same thing. Religion, one must fulfill it with enthusiasm. One must fulfill his religion with zeal, with excitement. And one can learn from the way other people pursue their thrills with enthusiasm. We could learn from them that we have to pursue our Torah with the same excitement. One rabbi saw a businessman coming home late at night in the month of December when the retailers are busy. And he was coming home very late at night. And the rabbi said, it's 11 o'clock at night. Where are you coming from? He says, from work. And the rabbi turned to his students and says, if this man can pursue money with such excitement that he can come home at 11 o'clock at night with such motivation, then we must pursue our business. None of us could leave the yeshiva before 11 p.m. We can't be worse than him. He's pursuing his business with excitement. We should be less. It's Torah less than... So when we see people involved in the thrills of life, that's a musar to us. So if they run after their pleasures with such a motivation, so that's a musar to us. That we should be just as committed to the good as they are committed to the bad. And that's what he says over here. Yaakov was criticizing himself. Yaakov was saying, "Im navan garti v'teriyag mitzvot shamarti." Yes, I kept the teriyag mitzvot, but you know what? Lo lamati mimahasav ara'im. He said, "I'm sorry to say, I didn't learn from Navan's bad ways, which means I wasn't as zealous in doing good as he was zealous in doing bad." He says, "I'm sorry to say, I did not learn from his bad ways," which means I should have learned from his bad ways. If I could have seen the way Navan gets up 3 o'clock in the morning in order to plan his next trick, in order to plan his next scam. He says Lavan was didn't have a bone of laziness in him when it came to fulfilling his Tariyag Mitzvot. He says, "I kept Tariyag Mitzvot, but unfortunately, lo lamati b'ma'asav ara'im. I didn't learn to be just as excited as Lavan is to his things than I should be to my things." There was one rabbi, Rav Heschel from Krakow. He was a young man. He was a boy. And one day he woke up late, and his father came to him, and his father said, "Why do you wake up late today?" He said, "Dad, I have a yetzer hara." He says, "So what?" He says, "Well, the yetzer hara got the best of me." He says, "This morning he beat me." So the father started to rebuke the young rabbi. The father told him, "You have to learn from the yetzer hara." He says, "The yetzer hara wakes up very early in the morning in order to try to get you to go back to sleep. So if the yetzer hara can wake up early in the morning, so you could be better than the yetzer hara." So the young rabbi answered his father and said, "Dad, it's not a good example." He says, "The Yetzer Hara can get up early in the morning because he doesn't have a Yetzer Hara." He says, "Why have a Yetzer Hara?" This young boy answered. He was sharp. He answered right. But that's what the rabbi is trying to teach us over, that we must learn from those that run after their pleasures. When we see them involved in their physical pursuits, so we should learn that for us, that we should be just as committed to fulfill the Tariyag Mitzvot. Further in Parasha, it tells us that he sent some servants, Yaakov sent some servants, Abadim, to go talk to Esav. And it writes in Perek Lamed Bet, Pasuk Yud Het, it says like this, Vayiten biyad avadav. He gave his servants eder lebado, a flock of animals. Vayomer el avadav ifru lefanai verevach tasimu ben eder u ben eder. So it says he took all the gifts that he was giving him and he split it up into three sections. Vaitzavet arishon lemor, and he told the first group of slaves, ki yifgashecha esav achi, when you meet my brother, ush'enecha lemor, he's going to ask you, lemi ata, he's going to say, who are you? Ve'ana telech, and where are you going? Ulmi elle lefanecha, and what are these animals? Ve'amarta le'avdecha le'yaakov, tell him, to your servant Yaakov, Minhahi Shiluchala Dunil Esav. This is a gift sent to my master Esav. And then he tells the second group of slaves, Vaitzav Gamet Hasheni, when he's going to ask you, who are you? And what is this animals? You'll answer them. Vamarta Le'avdecha Le'Yaakov, from the servant Yaakov, it is a gift sent to my master Esav. Vaitzav Gamet Hashenishi, and he told the third group the same thing. So the rabbis are concerned, what exactly Yaakov making such a big deal, sending it with the three slaves, and going through the whole question, when they ask you, who are you, and who does this belong to, and he gives them exactly the answer, and he's very careful to repeat it three times, nobody should get this conversation wrong, that they should have their script very clear, what they're going to answer to Esav. So the Hafetz Chaim writes in one of his Sefarim, Chumat HaDat, we know Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov fulfilled the entire Torah before it was given. You have to know that. They fulfilled the entire Torah. It says Avraham Avinu even fulfilled Eruv Tavshilin. The Eruv that we make before the holiday. When the holiday comes out on Thursday, Friday, Shabbat, and we take the egg and we do the matzah. It's Avraham Avinu did Eruv Tavshilin. It says he ate matzah on Pesach. That's written clearly in the Torah. Last week we read Yitzhak Avinu, he brought Korban Pesach. He ate Korban Pesach. That's what Esav went to bring him, Korban Pesach, before he gave him a beracha. And there's proofs throughout the Torah how the forefathers kept the entire Torah even before it was given. How did they know it? Probably it was Ruach HaKodesh. Probably it was through prophecy. They knew everything, the Avot HaKedoshim. Now there's a halakha that says if a person has a slave, in the olden days, we were allowed to own slaves. It was called Eved Kena'ani. You would go to the marketplace, you would buy a servant who's a goy. He's not Jewish. But the halakha says, once you bring him into your home, he must semi-convert. What do I mean semi-convert? He must fulfill mitzvot, at least that the ladies are obligated in. Meaning he's exempt from all positive commandments that are bound by time, like ladies are exempt from. Ladies don't have to put on tefillin, they don't have to shake the lulav, they don't have to sit in the sukkah. The Eved Kenani is also exempt from those laws, but he must fulfill Shabbat, he must eat kasher, he must fulfill the laws of the holiday. Why is that the case? Because we don't want to bring a servant into our home that's going to be a bad influence on our children. Not like we do today where we bring a maid into our home. If we go to their rooms in the basement, Shemaisa, you'll see a church in the basement with their crosses and their Bibles and all their other paraphernalia. The Torah didn't want to expose our children and our homes to such things. So they said, you want to have it? You could have all the avadim you want. You could have 10 maids. But when they come into your home, they must be Jewish now. They must convert. So the halakha says, and it's brought down in Gemara, that a person, let's say, has a slave, an Eved. Now, he doesn't want him anymore. He's not allowed to sell him to a non-Jew. Why? Because now already we influenced him. Now already he's fulfilling part of the mitzvot. He's doing part of the Torah. Now if you're going to sell him to a goy, so that's it. He's not going to fulfill any of the mitzvot anymore. Now already he's going to go back to his old ways. So you can't do that to him. Once he converts, he has to be Jewish. You can't put him in an environment now. Are the goy's going to now give him kasher food? Of course not. Are the goy's going to let him take off on Shabbat? Of course not. So therefore, the halakha says that we fine him and we force him to buy him back, even if he has to pay 10 times the amount that he sold it for. He must redeem him and buy him back to bring him back to his house. So now we understand the story over here. Yaakov is sending slaves and animals. Esav might be under the misimpression that the slaves belong to him as well as the animals. Now, Yaakov doesn't want to give the slaves to Esav. You're not allowed to give the slaves to Esav. It's haram. These slaves are fulfilling the Torah with Yaakov. If he gives it to Esav, they're going to become not religious. So Yaakov says, he's going to ask you, lemi ata. The first question he's going to say, who do you belong to? Are you mine? Are you part of the gift? Or do you belong to Yaakov? Ulmi illa lefanecha. Then he's going to ask him, what about the animals? Who do the animals belong to? Ve'amarta, you know how you should answer? Le'avdecha li'Yaakov. The first answer is, we belong to Yaakov, meaning we're not part of the gift. And regarding the animals, Minha hi shiluha laduni le'Esav. The animals, yes, that's a gift sent to Esav. So you see over here, Yaakov first of all fulfilled the whole Torah, that he would not give over his slaves to Chas v'Shalom a goy. But you learn over here, the Hafetz Chaim says, what a musar for every parent, how careful they have to be to raise their children. If we're not allowed to expose our Eved Kana'ani to a bad environment, because already he's starting to do the mitzvot and be observant. And we're not allowed to expose them to the Gentile society. Imagine our children. Our children are not avadim. Our children are not slaves. They're not shefcha. They're not servants. Kalvachomer ben benoshel kalvachomer, says the Hafetz Chaim, how careful we have to be when it comes to the influence that we provide to our children, the things that they're exposed to and the things that they see. Whether it's in, like I said, the theaters, the movies, even magazines, ladies, you must be vigilant in which magazines you allow into your homes. Many years ago, there was not really a selection of Jewish magazines to read, and therefore was a big test, because people like to have magazines in the house to read the news, etc. Today, however, there is no excuse that we should allow magazines of fashion, Chas v'Shalom, especially we have young boys in the house. Chas v'Shalom, we're causing them to make sin by bringing these fashion magazines into our home. We think we're reading them, adults are reading them, but the children are reading them also. Chas v'Shalom can lead to avera. These things are never supposed to come into a Jewish home. One time, a great rabbi, Baba Sali, Alav HaShalom, they came to him once, a couple, they couldn't have children. The rabbi said, because you have not good magazines in your home, get rid of them and you'll have children. They looked at each other, what are you talking, not good magazines? They went, they scoured the whole entire house. Nothing. They came back to him. He said, you still have it. Leave, out, there's nothing to talk about. What are you talking? Check, we made Bidikat Hames Hakam on the whole house, there's nothing there. They went back and forth a few times. Finally, they took apart the house, and they lifted the mattress. And under the mattress, there was a fashion magazine. The wife had one fashion magazine, so she would read it before she would go to sleep. And where would she put it? She would just put it underneath the mattress. On the bed that they were trying to have children on it, the Baba Sali already saw that there's Chas v'Shalom, things that are not supposed to be. They got rid of it, and shortly after she got pregnant, she had a child. But you see over, that's besides that, besides the tumah that it brings in the home. But the fact that there's children there, they're being influenced by such a thing. Today they have kosher magazines, whether it's the Jewish Observer, whether it's the Hamudia. These are newspapers. You can get a newspaper, but it's a kosher newspaper where they select only the things that are necessity to read, stories that have basis of Torah, not things that are not proper to read, perverted things like that. And it has Jewish ideas, Dvre Torah a little, and some things for the children. Why should a person get a New York Times, a Chas v'Shalom, or a New York Post, or any other brief things like that, where besides the fact that it's full of lies, besides that, but it's Gilui Arayot, there's things in there that are not becoming for Jewish eyes to see. If we have to worry about the influence of our Eved, our maids, we have to worry about what they see. Shouldn't our children deserve equal rights as a servant? We shouldn't make our children less than the Abid. If they have to be put in a good environment according to our Torah, Kal Vachomer, we should subscribe to these magazines. Hamishpacha, whatever they are, you'll see them in the marketplace. It's a mitzvah to subscribe to these things, to have them in the house. Why? You'll see your children on Shabbat, they'll pick it up. They'll be sitting, they have nothing to do, they'll pick up a magazine, they'll read it. And then they'll be influenced by good things. Otherwise, instead of picking up things, Chas v'Shalom, that are not proper for them, the kids are innocent. They're going to read it, they're going to get influenced, they're tainted. Now already you put a foreign idea in their mind, very difficult to undo it. So this is what it says over here, how he's told them, tell Esav, when he asks you, who are you? You answer, Ve'amarta le'avdecha le'Yaakov. Say, no, we belong to Yaakov, we're not part of the gift. The animals, bin hahi shiluha laduni, they're Esav. Yaakov Abinu makes a prayer,
before he meets Esav. One of the things he said was that he mentions how when he went to Laban's house, he had nothing with him. It says, "Ki b'makli avarti et hayarden hazeh." He says, he's reminiscing, when he's praying to God, he says, "Borei Olam, look how much good you did to me. When I went to my uncle's Lavan's house 20 years ago, I had nothing. No gold, no silver. Ki b'makli avarti et hayarden hazeh. All I had was my stick, nothing else." So the rabbis ask, what do you mean he had nothing else? All he had was a stick. Yitzhak Aminu was a wealthy man. Well, he sent his son without any provision. He sent him without any money. Hakamim tell us, no, Yaakov left very wealthy. But on the way there, he met his nephew Eliphaz. As you know the story, Eliphaz was the son of Esav. Yaakov sees Eliphaz, he says, "Everything okay?" He says, "Everything is fine." Eliphaz, that's his name. Eliphaz, the son of Esav, saw his uncle Yaakov, and he tells him, "My father said I have to kill you." "Yaakov, you have to kill me?" So he says, "No, you can't kill me. There's nobody in me, but kibud avayim, my father said I have to kill you." So Yaakov saw already that he's not really too logical on this. So he said, "Listen, I have an idea. You want to fulfill the mitzvah of kibud avayim? No problem. Take all my money." The Gemara says, "Ani hashuv kamit," that a poor person is considered as if he's dead. And therefore, technically, you'll kill me. Not physically. Your father didn't say how to kill me. He said, "Kill him." So he'll kill me. Take all my money. He took everything. He gave Eliphaz everything. It says even his clothes he gave him. And all he left him with is what? A stick. So he says, "Keep him at the avarti et hayarden." All I had was my stick. Everything else went to Eliphaz. I was thinking to myself that Eliphaz over here is a very confused child, it seems. On one hand, he's telling Yaakov that he has to kill him. And when Yaakov Abinu says, "How could you kill me? It's not allowed." He says, "But what do you mean? Kibud avayim. My father said I should kill you." Where did he become such a confused child? On one hand, he's very religious. "My father said, kibud avayim, I have to listen." And on the other hand, he's a violent animal. He's going to go kill Yaakov Abinu. How could you be a murderer and honor you and be a good son following Kibud Av at the same time? It doesn't match. You know what the explanation is, ladies? He was a son of his father. What was Esav? Esav was exactly that. Which mitzvah did Esav fulfill? Kibud Av. And what did Esav do all day long? He murdered. The children will learn from the parents. Look at this, what came out. That the same confusion that Esav had, that already the child saw. When it came to Kibud Av, yes, Eliphaz saw Esav respect Yitzhak Abinu. Eliphaz saw how important respecting parents was. And therefore he says, Kibud Av, to my father, respecting parents was important more than anything. And therefore I have to listen. But listen to what? To murder him? Yeah, because my father used to murder all day long also, so that was important to my father. So, you see, Eliphaz was an offspring of Esav, but he was compatible. Because that's exactly what he saw in his father's home. So we have to be very careful as parents not to be contradictory in our behavior. Because Chas v'Shalom, that can cause our children to become confused. On one hand, they're very careful in one thing, and they're very lenient in another. We tell our children, "What are you doing?" Most of the time, they saw that from us, that we contradict ourselves, and therefore, they contradict themselves. This can happen also when a husband and wife are sending mixed messages to their children. A husband is religious, and the wife isn't, or vice versa. So now the children already see differences. They see a dichotomy between the two different philosophies of the home. And therefore the child, Chas v'Shalom, can also get a bit confused. As we see, Eliphaz was a problem child because of this. How could you live in a house where, you know, Esav screaming all day long, "Kibud Av, Kibud Av, Kibud Av," and he has a knife that's dripping blood because he just went and killed somebody. So the child now comes out and says, "Yeah, my uncle Yaakov, I have to kill you." "How could you kill me?" "What do you mean? Killing, we kill." But who told you to kill? My father, Kibud Av. We respect parents. What are you talking? It's outrageous. But that's the confusion that was created by Esav. But I saw a very interesting piece of Zohar. The Zohar says, what happened with this stick? The stick of Yaakov Avinu. Says, so the Zohar says, the stick ended up becoming an integral piece of the Mishkan. The Mishkan was the tabernacle. The tabernacle had boards. It was made up of kerashim, boards that went across on all three sides. And on the you walked into it. But it was like a structure of kerashim all across. Now, how did these kerashim, these poles, how did they stay connected to each other? So it says there was a bolt. There was a hole in between all the poles, and they would stick a bolt in between, and that would hold them from falling. The main bolt was called Bariya Hatichon. That was the center bolt that held the kerashim of the Mishkan together. Where did that center bolt come from? It says the stick of Yaakov Abinu was not just after he passed away, they didn't throw it away. Chas v'shalom. When a tzaddik comes in contact with something, it becomes holy. Just the mere fact that the tzaddik used it to walk. Yaakov, what did he use his stick for? He didn't use it to split the sea like Moshe Rabbeinu. Actually, maybe he did, according to some opinions. He split the Yarden. But the point is, more than that, it was a walking stick. But what? Since it came in contact with Yaakov, it becomes holy. And therefore, it becomes part of Mishkan. The rock that Yaakov slept on, the Zohar says, what happened to that rock? Last week we read there was 12 rocks, and they were fighting with each other, and they all became one. So Yaakov used it as a pillow. What happened to that rock when he woke up? The Torah said, the Zohar writes, Borei Olam came, and he pressed it in the ground, and that became the foundation of the Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash was built on that rock, over the Holy of Holies. Why? Because Yaakov put his head on that rock. The mere fact that the tzaddik used the rock, it becomes now Kodesh Kodashim. So I saw one of the rabbis say the following idea. This doesn't do too much for me. Okay, so the rock became the Kodesh Kodashim, the basis. The stick became the Bariya Hatichon of the Mishkan. But what's the lesson that I could learn from this? Well, first you could learn a lesson how holy the tzaddikim are. That anything they come in contact with becomes elevated. But I read a Gemara that says, when Yaakov was in the house of Lavan for 20 years, he read the Tehillim. How did he read the Tehillim if it wasn't written yet? Well, it's just like I told you before. The Avot knew the Torah, and they knew all these things before it happened. And the Gemara even quotes Pesukim. How Yaakov Avinu read the Tehillim every day from cover to cover, in the house of Lavan for 20 years. Another opinion says he didn't read the whole Tehillim. He just read all the Tehillim that begin with the word Shir HaMa'alot. There's 15 chapters in Tehillim that start off Shir HaMa'alot LeDavid. Shir HaMa'alot LeDavid. And the Gemara even says, Shir HaMa'alot LeDavid, Yom Arna Yisrael. Lulei Adonai Shayalanu, Yom Arna Yisrael. It was said by Yisrael. Who's Yisrael? Yaakov. So I read it's hinted in the Tehillim itself. So I thought to myself, if the stick of Yaakov, because he came in contact with it, became holy, and the rock, because he used it as a pillow, became holy, imagine those 15 chapters of Tehillim. By the fact that Yaakov uttered them for 20 years, those 15 chapters must have extra kiddusha and extra benefit, more than all the other perakim of Tehillim in the Sefer. Out of the 150 perakim, these chapters over here must be great. Not only because David HaMelech wrote them, because if Yaakov Avinu attached himself to them, and he connected himself to them, so now already he elevated those mizmorim to a different level. And therefore it's a good advice from time to time, especially on Shabbat, the custom is to read those 15 mizmorim, Shir HaMa'alot. So you have a chance on Shabbat to read the Tehillim. Take out those 15 chapters. You'll see them. They're towards the end. They're towards the end. I'll show them in the Sefer after. It's a mitzvah to read them. You can read them any day. But specifically on Shabbat, the custom is to read them. not a halakha, I'm saying, ladies. You do not have to read any of the Tehillim. I'm just saying something that's nice. Don't become obsessed by this now that you have to read your Tehillim. You can do whatever you want. I'm just saying it's a concept that these 15 Perakim obviously have a greater... Don't run out there. Our mentor said you have to read the 15 Perakim. I'm not saying you have to read them. I'm just saying it's going to be a nice thing based on this concept that it's a very good thing. It's a great thing to read the Tehillim every day. In this parasha, we read about a very tragic episode, the story of Dinah. Dinah was the daughter of Yaakov, the daughter of Leah. It says she went out into the daughter of Yaakov and Leah. She went out to the city of Shechem, and unfortunately Shechem ben Hamor, which was one of the important people of the town, saw Dinah, and he took her, and he violated her. Yaakov heard what happened. It says, Ve'hirish Yaakov did not respond. The sons of Yaakov came home, and they heard, it says, Vayitasebu anashim, they got all upset. How can they do this to Dinah? Vayihar lahem meod, they got very angry. They said, Ki nivala asabi Israel. What a terrible thing. What a travesty. Lishkav et bat Yaakov, to commit such a crime with the daughter of Yaakov Avinu. V'chen lo ya'aseh. And such a thing cannot be done. V'chen lo ya'aseh. It cannot be done, such a thing. So the rabbis ask, what are they adding those words, v'chen lo ya'aseh? They were upset. Obviously they were upset because nevala asa b'Yisrael l'shkav et bat Yaakov. That what a terrible thing. The daughter of Yaakov was violated. And then they add, v'chen lo ya'aseh. And this is not done. So I saw from one of the rabbis, he said like this, Shimon and Levi, as a result of this, they went out and killed the whole city of Shechem. They went and destroyed the whole city. They killed all the men. So the rabbi explained, why did they react so much? Well, number one, look what they did. But you know what? Is this the first travesty? We read about scandals and problems and people get involved with things that are not good every day. Well, every time there's going to be some sort of scandal now, we're going to take out knives and kill the whole town and overreact? So the rabbi said, yeah, but v'chen lo ya'aseh. It's not done. There are certain things that are just not acceptable. There are certain things that unfortunately are wrong, but people fall, they succumb to the Yetzer Hara. But other things are just not tolerable. Even if it wasn't the daughter of Yaakov, even if it's unacceptable. It's like he said, there was one time a fellow came to the rabbi with a Shalom Bayit problem. So in the discussion with the rabbi, he said that he got angry at his wife. So as he was walking out, and she was following him to continue the argument, so he slammed the door on her face. So the rabbi said, this, it doesn't matter if you were right or wrong now. This action of slamming a door on a spouse, v'chen lo ya'aseh, such a thing is not done. It's not acceptable. This thing is not normal behavior, which means other things you can maybe tolerate. But this is finished, you're wrong. There's nothing you can say now. There's no way you can justify such behavior. It's like somebody in the middle of the Beit Midrash gets up and punches somebody. So of course it's wrong to punch anybody. But okay, a person loses his temper, a person made a mistake. But in the middle of a Beit Midrash? Unheard of. What did you ever hear a person? You want to say it happened in the hallway? Okay, it's wrong. We have to deal with it. It happened in the street. It's fine. In the middle of the Bet Midrash, where students are learning, someone should get up now and punch out his friend. So that's what the children of Yaakov were saying. First of all, there was a nevala that was done. There was a travesty done that they were with the daughter of Yaakov. But if that was only it, okay, fine, maybe we would. But such an act, it's intolerable. And that's worse than the first claim that they had. When people do things that are off the charts, when people do things that are unheard of, that are unacceptable in society, that's a much bigger avon. That magnifies the sin. For example, it's maybe unfortunately accepted in certain parts a certain measure of immodesty at our weddings or at our parties or in the synagogue. Of course it's wrong. No one justifies such a thing. It's a nevala. It's a perverted thing. It's a travesty to have people that come dressed immodestly in the synagogue or dressed immodestly at a hatuna where the shekhinah is. It's clear. It's wrong. Nobody can justify it. But to lower the standard and to come and dress in a way that's not done, v'chinno ya'aseh, to go do something that's beyond, that was intolerable even to the people that are not modest people, this already is a much bigger avon. You can't say, well, this is immodest and this is immodest. What's the difference between this and this? Yeah, but this is not accepted practice. This is something that's totally beyond tolerating. And that's, we always have to be careful that our actions should not be in the category of v'chen lo ya'aseh. We have to be careful that even if our actions are not maybe tariyag mitzvot 100%, but we cannot be involved in things that are just unacceptable practice, whether it's the way we dress or we let our children dress. Certain things, v'chen lo ya'aseh, we don't do this. It's not done. It's not acceptable in Jewish lifestyle to behave in such a way, to talk in such a way, to act in such a way. A man would come along and punch a lady in the mouth. V'chen lo ya'aseh, you say, it's not done. It's impossible. A man punch a man, you say, okay, this happens. People get upset. It's wrong. It's wrong, there's no question, but we have to deal with it. But certain things, it doesn't enter the mind. And that's already, we're learning over here. Unfortunately, in the community, a lot of times, the avonot fall into the category of the v'chen lo ya'aseh, where they're just chakras. We say, wow, I can't believe it, such a thing as... And that already is something that cannot be tolerated. If we tolerate minor infraction or mistakes, but major scandals and major falling from what's expected of us, that has no, there's no room to accept it. Then already the reaction must be of an outcry and a protest, and something must be done in order to protect the wall of Klai Yisrael, that it doesn't, Chas v'Shalom, go to a lower level. Well, just say one last idea. In the Perasha, there is one mitzvah in this week's Perasha. I'll just read you from the Sefer HaChinuch what he says about this mitzvah, and we'll conclude. Yaakov, when he got into the fight with the angel, the wrestling match, so it says the angel hit him in his hip. He dislocated his hip, and one of the spot where he actually hit him was on the sciatic nerve. In Hebrew, they call that sciatic nerve Gid HaNasheh. And the Torah says, because Yaakov got hit in the Gid HaNasheh, so that vein became forbidden for the Jewish people to eat. That sciatic nerve, incidentally, is probably where a lot of the filet mignon and the T-bone steak, that nerve runs right through that area, the hindquarters of the animal. And that's why we don't find too much kosher filet mignon. It's very expensive. It's much easier for the shohet to slaughter it and just sell the hindquarters to the goyim. He can make more money instead of having to take out the gid hanasheh and make it kosher. But in any event, the shohet or minaker has to be experienced to know how to devein the animal from all the gid hanasheh. Not something easy. So the Sefer HaChinuch writes, Sefer Hainuch is a book that was written by one of the Rishonim, Rabbi Aharon HaLevi. In it he explains the 613 mitzvot. He goes through every one of the mitzvot and tells us the reason why. What's the logic of the mitzvah? So in this one he says, there's a nice hint, a nice remez. He says the Jewish people are going to suffer by the hands of Esav. The fact that Esav, his angel, was fighting Yaakov is a sign that anti-Semitism is always going to be an unfortunate reality that we have to accept. And there's going to be unfortunate casualties as a result of anti-Semitism throughout the generations. If the angel of Esav was able to fight with Yaakov, that's a sign for the future. Klal Yisrael is going to suffer, as we know throughout history. Klal Yisrael was a victim of pogroms and inquisitions and holocausts and all other forms of violence. But he says, "Ela le'olam ya'amod zara'am ve'shmam." The Goyim will never be able to eradicate the Jewish people. The Jewish people have a guarantee they will always exist. Even when Hitler sought his final solution to rid the world of Jews, Sefer Hanukkah told us from then, impossible. Nobody will be able to ever eradicate the Jewish people from the world. They might come close, but Klal Yisrael will always exist. There'll always be a Jew. And he says that the...
It's coming because Esav hated
Rodin. Esav is the Goy. The Malach is the Goy. Yaakov is the Jew. When they fought, that's the Goyim fighting with the Yehudim. He says that's the reality. That's going to happen. That has to happen. And it's going to repeat itself countless times. But he says one thing is for certain. Yaakov is going to prevail. And he says that Malach that hit him in his Gida Nesher says Yaakov was limping. As a result. And then it says the sun came out and the sun healed it. And Yaakov walked away without any harm. And he comes along and says that sun is referring to the son of Mashiach. The light of Mashiach. Yes, the Jewish people at the end of time are going to be persecuted. However, God is going to bring the sun out. And he's going to heal Klal Yisrael. And all the casualties are going to be resurrected. And all the people that died in Holocaust are going to come back to life. And all the people that died through terrorism are going to be resurrected at Tihayat HaMetim. And the sun is going to shine. And Yaakov is going to be complete. And Am Yisrael will prevail. That's why we don't need the Gida Nasheh. The Gida Nasheh is a reminder of the infinite existence of our nation. It's that Klal Yisrael is impenetrable. That although they might get us from time to time, but the Klal Yisrael will endure. The endurance of Klal Yisrael, that's the mitzvah of Gida Nasheh. So besides the Kashrut law, there's a hint to it that just like Yaakov got hit and he limped, but eventually he was healed in that spot, and that shows us that Klal Yisrael will recover from all their enemies. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen. Amen.